If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
Time for This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantis, and we'll start with Ronald Reagan at Wrigley Field. Good morning, Anna.
Good morning, Bob. This week, 1988, in fact, you're right, Wrigley Field received a special visit from President Ronald Reagan, who came on out to the friendly confines that year to throw out the ceremonial first pitch at the Cubs game. Reagan was so warm. I went back and pulled these videos, Bob, and he was so warmly received. He was president. He was a Cubs fan, grew up in Dixon, Illinois. He was also a former Cubs play-by-play announcer, as many of your listeners will recall, that that he was at WHO Radio in Iowa. And he ripped the scores and all the game stats off of the wires and broadcast the Cubs action to the Midwestern audience outside Chicago. But that was way back in the 30s, and here he was 50 years later, returning to the Cubs, a second-term president, a few months away from leaving office, and Cubs fans just greeted him with tons of love and respect. We pulled a great clip here. Harry Carey broadcasting as Ronald Reagan came back to the Cubs to throw out the first pitch.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, not bad 50 years later.
And how about that? The president doesn't get booed. Everybody's cheering. That's a sign of those times.
Isn't it? Like, they were just giving him so much love in the ballpark. I mean, he had so many local connections, but still, it was kind of cool to see.
Yeah. This week in 1996, Harry Carey was getting a little political, wasn't he?
Yeah, you know, I didn't recall this, Bob. I don't know if you did, but it's kind of a perhaps a lesser known fact, or maybe just not so well remembered memory about Harry Carey. This week, 1996, the Democratic National Convention was held in Chicago that year. It was Bill Clinton going for his second run at office. And you might think such an important political event might warrant having a rising star politician close it out, or a Nobel laureate poet, perhaps, but not in Chicago. That was Bill Clinton's second run. And what did who did they have but Harry Carey? We pulled a clip from the WGN News from 1996. Mike Lowe was out there reporting at the convention, explaining how it all happened that Harry Carey was the guy who was closing it out.
It turns out Bill Clinton was an avid WGN viewer and a huge fan of Harry Carey's.
I do. I watched a lot of Cubs games, a lot of Bulls games, and a lot of movies on Channel 9.
The president personally invited Harry to sing on the final night of the convention, right before Clinton accepted his party's nomination.
A one, a two.
Then it was time to turn the UC.
Take me out to the ballgame.
Into Wrigley West.
I did not remember that.
I totally didn't remember that either. It's just funny to think of Bill Clinton being a WGN Superstation fan.
Yeah, no kidding. Wonder if he got into Bozo. Let's talk about a prehistoric discovery in the Chicago area, and it happened in 1999.
Yeah, this week, 1999, but for whatever reason, fall has been prime time for prehistoric discoveries in the Chicago area. And in 1999, an employee at Principia College was digging out a manhole on campus. He was between two residence halls and just dug down about 6 feet, which is unbelievable if you think about it. Lo and behold, he came across a giant woolly mammoth tusk. And it turns out the facilities manager, Benny White, was actually uncovering almost completely intact tusk skull and remains of a male woolly mammoth that roamed the Illinois plains 17,000 years earlier. They nicknamed it Benny after him, and it was pretty cool, but it's not the only one. There have been dozens of prehistoric mammoths and mastodons discovered over the years across Illinois, including in Warrenville, Bolingbrook, and other places. The first recorded discovery happened in 1880 when they were working on sewer lines in Wicker Park, and they came across a rib and another tusk, which led to a major discovery of a giant mastodon. It's pretty wild, though, if you think about it. Most of these things happened accidentally during construction projects. And if you went and imagined how many might be still lurking beneath the surface, Bob, I don't know. Might be worth doing some digging there, you know, in your backyard someday just to see what you find.
mostly mobsters and politicians, though, but
right,
occasionally.
You might be careful what you find.
Woolly mammoth. Well, you missed out if you weren't in Oprah's audience September 9th, 2004.
Perhaps the most famous Oprah episode ever, Bob. So popular it has become a major internet meme. It happened this week, 2004, from her West Loop Studios. Oprah surprised nearly 300 audience members, giving them each a new car, a Pontiac G6 sedan, valued at $28,000 at that time. Many of the audience members, by the way, were teachers. They were hardworking people, single moms, people who had survived hardship, and just people hand-selected by Oprah's team as those deserving of a special and generous gift. So it was a cool moment, if you really think about it. Everybody was getting a car, and the big reveal happened as Oprah directed her staff, come on out here with your nearly 300 wrapped gift boxes, each containing a car key. And we pulled a clip. Just muffle your ears if you're not ready for round two here, because there's a lot of screaming. Oh, my gosh.
Everybody gets a car.
Bob, Oprah called it one of her all-time favorite, happiest moments ever. Although some of the smiles faded when those new car recipients realized they had to pay taxes on their new set of wheels. It was like $6,000 to $7,000 per car, they figured out. So you can pay taxes, and you can pay taxes, and you can pay taxes, and not everybody was happy about paying the taxes. So Oprah's producer stepped in to offer a cash option for those who didn't want to make the tax payment or couldn't afford it at that time. So
yeah, I thought the next day they just gave everybody a check to pay their taxes, whatever the amount would be. Let's talk a little bit about the Labor Day history in Chicago.
Yeah, so we just celebrated Labor Day, and as we fire up our grills every year, it is often forgotten what a role Chicago played in Labor Day being established, the labor movement firmly rooted in Chicago here. It might not have ever been a federal holiday, it seems, without Chicago when you look at the history. Chicago workers who were toiling away in the stockyards, the factories, and working on the railroads and with transportation and commerce in the 1880s, they worked 10 to 16-hour days, and that was standard. It was 6 days a week, 10 to 16-hour days, at a flat rate. And workers were complaining about that and working conditions. And those complaints often went unanswered. So they organized and held many high-profile demonstrations that drew national attention, including one big one along Michigan Avenue. Tens of thousands of workers came together to demand an 8-hour workday, something that just wasn't done back then. So it became a national call to action. It was followed up by the railroad strike, of course, the Haymarket Affair, which was violent, but the Pullman Railroad strike was another huge moment in the labor movement when the workers' pay was slashed, but their company-supported housing was kept the same. And they went on strike, and it shut down rail transportation nationally, basically commerce in the United States, because everything was coming across the rail lines. That led to federal intervention, more national attention. President Grover Cleveland got involved. Concessions were made. Railroads reopened. And just a short time later that year, President Cleveland established Labor Day. So,
how about
pretty
that?
Significant.
More meaning than just a mattress sale, Labor Day.
For sure.
In Chicago.
For sure.
And we have such a great history of great restaurants here, and a lot of people will remember Chez Paul on Rush Street, and it closed in 95, but it was something for a while, wasn't it?
It was absolutely something. For 50 years, Bob, 1945 is when it opened. Super fancy French restaurant here in Chicago, located in the glamorous old McCormick Mansion on North Rush Street, right near Division. It was the oldest French restaurant in the city when it closed in 95. It was one of the most elegant restaurants in the city, frequented by a very well-dressed crowd and people with expensive tastes, which is why Ferris Bueller stood out so much when he showed up there in the movie Ferris Bueller's Day Off. Remember how he grabbed the reservation book from when the snooty maitre d' walked away and he wasn't looking? So he pulled a name off the reservation list. And he says, yeah, I'm Abe Froman. That was somebody with a reservation. We have the clip from that great, great scene.
Now, we do have a real sausage king here now, but I don't know if it's Abe Froman.
I I don't think, I think Abram was sort of a made up like name, but obviously there are many sausage kings, and clearly Ferris was able to pull it off because he eventually sat down and he was seated at lunch at Shea Paul. Although I'm told a lot of it was shot in L.A., still they did the exteriors and, you know, that's where it was set, but it was pretty cool moment from that iconic movie.
Mm-hmm. Next time I want to use a fake name, I'm going to go with Abe Froman.
You could pull that off, Bob. I think people would believe you.
Anna, you have a good day. We'll talk to you next
you
Wednesday.
You do, Bob.